the Locked On Eagles podcast. What's going on, everybody? As always, Louie DiBiase joining you. And, hey, took a deep breath for a couple days. Well, not even really, because day three of the NFL draft concluded on Saturday. So just took a one-day hiatus on Sunday from Eagles coverage as the NFL draft has officially concluded. Welcome into today's show, and it's the draft takeaways edition of the Locked On Eagles podcast. You obviously, I'm sure, if you're a big fan of the show, you tuned in, and we can't thank everyone enough again for the people that came in and listened to our live show on Thursday throughout the first round. It was so much fun to have me, Gino, and Lars all together, actually for the first time in person, with Lars and Gino and us three combined reacting to everything in the first round. It was exciting to be an Eagles fan that day as they moved up from 25 to 22. They select Andre Diller. There were a bunch of players available that we did not think that were going to be there. So it was a lot of unknown. They end up coming away with Diller. We did a podcast, the whole live show, and we posted our reactions to the Andre Diller pick. And if you guys listened, we do apologize in advance for maybe some of the dorky draft nerdy stuff where we're just going nuts that guys like Montez Sweat are still on the board and DK Metcalf ends up falling all the way to the bottom of the second. Can't really contain ourselves. Gino especially, with some unique and vintage moments, some classics that are going to be recorded, and we'll archive those, because Gino's reactions to the Raiders pick of Cleveland Farrell at four was priceless. When the Giants, of course, had a really fun draft from an Eagles perspective as they took Daniel Jones with the 6th overall pick, and then they ended up going with Dexter Lawrence with their 2nd pick. So Gino was pretty pumped about those and was just utterly shocked. So we did those reactions. We'll post on the website, lockedoneagles.com. And then, as always, we did on day two, the Eagles had 2 picks. They stuck at 53 and 57, despite the story that they almost moved out of 57 if Mecole Hardman was there. The New York Jets wanted to come up, so maybe the Eagles moved down. Instead of taking J.J. Arcega-Whiteside, who knows, maybe we're talking about Terry McLaurin, or I don't know. I mean, Kelvin Harmon fell in the 6th round. It was just such an unknown. I mean, you always think you have a good idea, a good understanding of boards, right? We did all those Locked in the Mocks, and we did our own rankings. And then suddenly, players that you thought were going to go in the first round, they end up falling into day two and sometimes day three. I mean, we talk about a guy we talked about here on the podcast a whole lot in Charles Omenihue. And the Eagles passed him over like 3 times in the 4th round. They had an opportunity to get him, and Houston gets him. The Eagles end up taking Sharif Miller out of Penn State instead. Not saying that that's a bad pick, but Sharif Miller probably went where people expected, and Charles Omenihue fell 2 rounds below what I thought his value was. So, I mean, again, going to DK Metcalf, 7 receivers, including Andy Isabella and Mecole Hardman, went ahead of him. I knew Hardman was going to go higher than people expected, but DK Metcalf, the 7th or 8th, whatever receiver he was off the board right there at the bottom of the 2nd round, it was just such an unexpected draft the way the board went, and that's why it was really fun, though. So we're going to get into all the takeaways from an Eagles perspective today on the podcast. But again, we did a recap. We dug into the Miles Sanders selection and the J.J. Arcega-Whiteside selection on Saturday night. So if you missed any of those podcasts, they're up and available wherever you subscribe to the show, on Apple Podcasts, Himalaya, Google Play, Spotify, or if you just listen to them on LockedOnEagles.com on your desktop. Maybe you're at work and you plug in those headphones, and while you're working away on your reports, you got me and Gino in your ear on your way home. You know, you can always tell Siri and Alexa, Echo Dot, whatever smart device you have, you'll be able to hear me and Gino. So we're recording 4 to 5 days a week, and those are all archived for you. So if you want to go back and relive those reactions live, they are up and available from this weekend. And again, I can't thank you guys enough for, even when we went live on the video portion, when the Eagles moved up to 22, had a lot of listener feedback, had a lot of interactions with you guys. And that's what we're here for. I mean, that's what we love to do. I love doing the podcast. I love writing the articles. But nothing gives me more enjoyment out of all of this doing Locked On Eagles than talking with you guys on Twitter. So there's my heartfelt, you know, thank you. It was the first time that we did a live show together, me, Gino, and Lars. And it was a pretty big production. We ended up recording. We went all 4 hours of the draft, and we had an hour pregame show as well. So it was super fun. And we hope you guys enjoyed it as much as we did. And I'm sure if you listened to the show at all, well, and maybe a little cheesy at times, but you can definitely tell that we had a lot of fun, just a bunch of fans talking football, and that's why we hope that you enjoy our perspective on the Philadelphia Eagles. And I'm going to give you my perspective today on just the whole draft in general. Like I said, from an NFL standpoint, we'll go through our winners and losers of the draft tomorrow. Definitely one of the winners, though, was Carson Wentz. The Eagles went all offense in the first two rounds, selecting Andre Dillard, Miles Sanders, and J.J. Arcega-Whiteside. It was to me, the most anticipated draft, the biggest buildup, most unknown, but yet the most entertaining from an Eagles perspective in the past couple years, mainly because of the amount of picks they had, although they ended up just making five picks. They had to move up. They had to get their left tackle at Andre Dillard, but I think the buildup in the class itself was fun because while, yeah, okay, they took Dillard in the first round, and everyone knows it's the meat and potatoes pick. You know you have to have that left tackle of the future. You know you have to protect Carson Wentz. But it's just funny from, like, a fan perspective, and it still is in me where, you know, if they take a running back or receiver, it's a little bit more exciting because you can go on YouTube, even if you're not a big X's and O's guy, you can just go watch those players make highlight reel plays. So it was funny. I asked what people wanted on day two, and one of the listeners came in and just said, anyone that has, like, a five-minute highlight reel on YouTube, because the Eagles have really addressed the trenches lately in the draft and quarterback, of course, in 2016. But since they picked Carson Wentz, I haven't been excited about the past couple draft classes much like I was about this year. And they, of course, start that off with Andre Dillard. The reaction always with a left tackle is, okay, yeah, like, we got to do that. We have to have our left tackle. But I think what he provides as a prospect for Philadelphia is perfect. I mean, and I'm even more excited about it today seeing Jeff Stoutland reacting on PhiladelphiaEagles.com. He did a film breakdown of Dillard at Washington State with Fran Duffy. And that gives me even more juice to see that this kind of potential with Dillard is now going to be added to what I think is the best offensive line coach in football in Jeff Stoutland. That's a recipe for success. And we were worried. I think a lot of people were worried that, you know, Jason Peters has still played at a high level into his late 30s. But signing that one-year contract, the writing was on the wall. People thought maybe it would be this year that he hangs it up, considering he just couldn't stay healthy all year. I mean, he appeared in all 16 games, but kept coming in and out of the lineup. But, of course, he's got a whole offseason to get healthy. Seems like this might be the last year, though, because, I mean, you moved up. You gave up a fourth and a sixth-round pick for Andre Dillard. And now I was comfortable about the tackle position in the offensive line in general before that pick, and now it's even more, because left tackle was the only real immediate need that they had to have within the next 2 years. Because even, you know, I know they didn't take a safety, but Malcolm Jenkins and Roddy McLeod, I could see still playing really good football for a while still. I mean, even Howie Roseman said it, older players play longer now in the NFL. It's just how it works. So getting Dillard was a necessity. Would I have liked more draft picks? Absolutely. I mean, the Eagles only ended up making five picks again, much like they did last year. But when it comes to, I think it really is going to come down to the quality of the picks, not the quantity. Last year, I would still consider that a successful draft class, considering Dallas Goedert already, I think, is going to be in his second year one of the better tight ends in football. Avante Maddox came in the fourth round, shocked everyone, I think, and became this versatile Swiss Army knife Malcolm Jenkins-like player that had success on the outside and the slot and at safety. So if Andre Dillard becomes the left tackle of the future, I don't think we're going to be complaining that the Eagles got rid of that fourth and sixth round pick, right? If Miles Sanders becomes the next LeSean McCoy, or if J.J. Arcega-Whiteside becomes the next Alshon Jeffrey, it was a move that they had to make. I know the fourth and sixth is kind of hard to swallow, even Howie Roseman admitted it. But Andre Dillard's a player at Washington State, a school that threw more than anybody in FBS. He had more pass-protecting reps than anybody, and that was his main selling point. That was the attractive part of Andre Dillard's game, was that he is very used to protecting the quarterback in the passing game. And the Eagles throw it more than almost any NFL team. So, I mean, just like I said in the live draft show, Washington State's running back, James Williams, caught 202 balls with Washington State. So that just shows that air raid attack. And Dillard was, and the thing it wasn't just quantity of reps, it was also the quality. Dillard is one of the better pass-protecting left tackles. I think he has the most upside of any offensive tackle really in this draft. I mean, just look at some of these stats. I wrote a piece on 97.3 ESPN South Jersey just to kind of get people more excited, because again, you know, even as good as Dillard could be, bringing in a left tackle is never something that's going to really excite fans. I mean, the nerdy, the real diehards will, but it's never going to get your juices flowing like a Miles Sanders would, or even if they ended up getting my guy, Josh Jacobs. But just some stats to get you more excited. I mean, Dillard allowed one sack on 722 pass blocking snaps last year. That 722, by the way, was an FBS high. Here's some more Andre Dillard stats for you. He allowed three sacks on 1,510 pass blocking snaps the last 2 years. So you more than double the amount of pass blocking snaps, and Dillard only allowed two more sacks. Here's another one. Washington State's quarterback was just hit 14 times in 4 years with Dillard manning his blind side. On 2,391 passing snaps, Dillard gave up just 49 total pressures. So, I mean, edge rushers can still make an impact without finishing a sack, but even in that realm, Dillard was not letting him get a whole lot of pressure on the quarterback. And that final stat from that piece I wrote, Dillard had the second highest pass protection grade of the 2019 class from PFF. So this was a guy that Philadelphia had atop the top 10 of their board, and I think it was a move that they needed to make, and I think it's a move now. He doesn't have to play right away. He can sit back. He can learn behind Jason Peter. I mean, it's the best situation you can have for a developing tackle, right? You're going in with probably one of the best left tackles in NFL history, learning behind him. Jason Peter is a willing coach. You saw even when he got hurt in 2017, as he's getting wheeled off the field, he's talking up Halepuli Vaivaitai. So you got that going for you. And Jeff Stoutland. I mean, it's incredible. I'm so excited now about the young depth of this tackle position. Even if they trade away Big V for if you try to recoup some picks next year, even if you don't, though, I mean, you got Big V still, who's played legitimate stakes in games, right? He appeared in that whole Super Bowl run at left tackle. You don't even have to rely on him anymore, which is great because he's a very up-and-down player. You have Andre Dillard now in case Peters does continue to come in and out of the lineup. And now Jordan Mailata, while I love the development of him last summer, now you don't have to rely on that diamond in the rough actually developing. I still believe he can, and I still don't think it was a bad pick. I mean, it's a seventh-round pick with a guy of Mailata's upside. You still should have did that, and you still hope that he pans out, because at the worst, that's a depth guy you have for 3 years. Or if you, who knows what happens? Jason Kelce eventually out of town. Who knows if Isaac Seumalo moves inside at center? I'm not overly sure if Mailata could do it, but with his athleticism, I could see Mailata maybe even playing guard. You could see that as a scenario if he's versatile enough. So Mailata, Big V, now Andre Dillard as that heir apparent to Jason Peters. It was a move they had to make, and it was a move that I'm really excited about. I think it was the right player. I think me, Gino, and Lars kept bringing up Jaywan Taylor on the live show. But now actually looking more into it, I mean, it was mainly because Taylor was a consensus top 10 pick in most mock drafts. But looking at it, I think that the Eagles are probably going to get the right guy. And they had to have been ecstatic that a top 10 player on their board fell all the way to 22. There's just a lot of depth now. You have the optionality to trade Big V. And now you know that Carson Wentz's blind side is going to be protected. And that's the biggest key. Yeah, of course, adding weapons for Wentz is big. But having that protection for him to make sure that this guy can stay healthy, because that's the big key now for Carson Wentz is staying healthy, making sure this back injury is behind him, because once you suffer this injury, the stress fracture, it can happen again. So they need to make sure he is protected, and bringing in Andre Dillard now, big move to instill that confidence that in the future the Eagles will not be screwed at that important position. I would say quarterback is the most important position in football, and then you can argue whatever, defensive end or left tackle, but it's certainly one of the two. So I was a big fan of the Andre Dillard pick, and he's an athletic guy too. You know, I like athleticism in my offensive linemen, especially in the run game with how the Eagles like to pull linemen, get them up the field. I think Dillard, a little less athletic than Elaine Johnson, but Dillard and Johnson as your tackles, you really continue that athletic mold up front when you lose Jason Peters, who is one of the most athletically gifted offensive lineman in the history of football. All right, let's take a quick break here, and we'll continue our takeaways from the draft. Now we'll get into day two, the selections of Miles Sanders, the Penn State running back, at 53 overall, and then J.J. Arcega-Whiteside at pick 57. This is the Locked On Eagles podcast, and guys, today we're sponsored by ZipRecruiter. ZipRecruiter is the easiest place to hire. Hiring used to be hard. Multiple job sites, you know, stacks of resumes, a confusing review process. But again, today, hiring can be easy, and you can only do it at one place with it being this easy of a process. And it's ZipRecruiter.com. And ZipRecruiter.com/lockdown. ZipRecruiter sends your job to over 100 of the web's lead job boards, but they don't stop there. With their powerful matching technology, ZipRecruiter scans thousands of resumes to find people with the right experience and invite them to apply to your job. As applications come in, ZipRecruiter analyzes each one. Those advanced analytics, right, football fans, and spotlights the top candidates so you never miss a great match. And here's the thing, too. It's so effective that 80% of employers who post on ZipRecruiter gets a quality candidate through the site within one day. So if you post your job on ZipRecruiter, you have an 80%, 80% of employers at most get recommended on ZipRecruiter within that first day. So definitely recommend checking out ZipRecruiter.com. And right now, my Locked On Eagles listeners, we got a special offer. You can try ZipRecruiter for free at this exclusive web address. It's ZipRecruiter.com/lockdown. That's ZipRecruiter.com/LOCKEDON, no caps. It's ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. All right, everybody, welcome back to the Locked On Eagles podcast. Now getting into our takeaways from day two of the draft. The Eagles select Miles Sanders, the running back out of Penn State, with the 53rd overall pick, and then they take Stanford wide receiver J.J. Arcega-Whiteside, so they take one of my guys in Sanders. I've been clamoring for a running back with this kind of ability for 3 years now, really since that whole just absolute collapse of 2015 happened. I've been looking for a running back like this to add to the Eagles, and then they get Geno's boy, J.J. Arcega-Whiteside, J-Jaw, I don't know if it's going to be J-John, whatever we decide to nickname him, but he is a special player in the second round, and I think this, some people were kind of upset they didn't go safety because there were the Nazir Adderleys of the world on the clock, on the board, Chauncey Gardner-Johnson, who ended up falling all the way to the fourth round, which is just absolutely insane. Again, another player, just we just had no idea how this draft was going to go, as we thought Gardner-Johnson was going to be a early first-round pick. And by early, I would say like mid-teens, like late, early 20s. And he ended up falling all the way to the fourth round. But I like the theme of what the Eagles did. They are all in on Carson Wentz. They got him his protector of the future in Andre Dillard. They needed a running back. Like I said on Saturday's show, it's the only thing that Carson Wentz hasn't had that Jared Goff has had, that Dak Prescott has had, that even Patrick Mahomes had with Kareem Hunt before that whole debacle went down. Even the Patriots took Sony Michel with a first-round pick this year, and that was huge for Tom Brady because when Brady struggled at the end of the season, Sony Michel took over and he carried that into the playoffs. He was the only offensive factor in that Super Bowl. So Carson Wentz has been able to show elite ability despite not having a weapon at running back, and that's what Miles Sanders possesses. Again, I mean, if we had a Miles Sanders in that divisional round while Nick Foles was struggling, who knows what would have happened. Now you know you can go to the run game if the passing game struggles, right? If the offensive line is struggling, the run game is how you bounce them back. If Carson Wentz is struggling, if it's a tough defensive game, you know you can go to a guy like Miles Sanders. I think he's going to be a lead ball carrier. I know probably to start, Jordan Howard will get the majority of the work. I don't think that's going to last very long. And I think this puts to rest, by the way, the myth that the Eagles don't care about running back, that the Eagles don't want a lead ball carrier, that they want to go solely based on committee. Based on what Howie Roseman said, based on what Joe Douglas said about looking for this kind of running back for years, which backs up the reports that they wanted McCaffrey, that they wanted Dalvin Cook, that Daniel Jeremiah thought they would be interested in Sony Michel, this backs that up, that they have wanted to add this caliber of a player for a while. So maybe the committee-like approach, the style of players that they've had in the backfield, has only been based on necessity because they've just simply missed out on the players they wanted. So I'm starting to think, actually, and with that trade for Jay Ajayi, it seems like they actually really do care about running back. And they called Miles Sanders a three-down back. They compared him to LeSean McCoy. He was a staff favorite. Someone who, by the way, I thought it was a really interesting point. It makes me feel, and it should make you feel even better about the pick, is that they thought if Miles Sanders stayed another year, because remember, he only started 1 year with Saquon Barkley manning the backfield before that. If he stayed another year, Howie Roseman thought he might have been a higher selection. They were surprised he fell to 53. So Sanders could maybe have been a first-round pick next year. Who knows? I mean, it's going to be a good class, but if he plays another year at the level that he did last year, I could definitely see it. So this is a player that the board fell perfectly for the Eagles in the second round. Corners, offensive linemen, and tight ends were going all the time in that second round. So there were a lot of receivers. There was a lot of defensive linemen to choose from. There were a lot of safeties. And yet the Eagles still went Miles Sanders. So that kind of shows, hey, I think that they do care about this position, and I think it shows that it does matter. This position does matter. Look at the Super Bowl. I like to always use this point. Corey Clement, LeGarrette Blount, and Jay Ajayi nearly combined for 300 yards from scrimmage. We saw what Corey Clement did through the air in that Super Bowl. 100 receiving yards and a touchdown in that game. Miles Sanders, I think, is an underutilized receiver that in this Doug Peterson offense now, the way you use Darren Sproles, I think you can do the same thing with Miles Sanders. He's faster than people give him credit for at 4.5. He tested great at the combine. His soft hands, I thought he was excellent in shorts, and it matches on the film. This is a dude that, they compared to McCoy with his cut ability, which is absolutely 100%. He is so elusive with his footwork and with his cutting on a dime-like mentality. But at the same time, his contact balance is even better than McCoy's. I mean, he is bouncing off tackles. He's able to get down to the second and third level and consistently create chunk big plays. And that's what Philadelphia needs. It's why I'm so happy they brought back DeSean Jackson, and it's why I'm happy they brought in Miles Sanders, is because they have the size, they have the route running technicians now with Arcega Whiteside too going in with Ertz and Alshon and Goddard. Right, they have the size, they have the catch radius, the great hands, they have the speed inside in the slot in Nelson Agholor, who can make plays down the field, but they didn't have a lot of players that after the ball's already in their hands, they can take that 5-yard play and they can make it a 20-yard play, they can make it a 30-yard play, they can take it to the house. And that's what, I mean, of course, DeSean Jackson brings to the table, but now you add that into the backfield, now you have to take into account that that's a problem at running back as opposed to a guy like Wendell Smallwood, who you really don't have to game plan against. That's a huge advantage now for Carson Wentz and for this Eagles team. And it's going to make play action better, RPOs. I'm so happy that they finally got a guy that, again, they've been looking for this kind of player, which makes me feel better because I've been going in on this too. I've wanted Josh Jacobs and Dalvin and Christian McCaffrey and Sony Michel last year. I loved Darius Geis. I thought they should have took him in the second round. So I think people should be really, really confident about this Miles Sanders pick, and I don't think it's going to be long before he is your, even if it's not, I'm not totally anti-committee. I mean, committee has its perks, keeping guys fresh, keeping people healthy. But I think, again, I've said it a bunch of times in the podcast, there's such an advantage to a player that can do everything on a third and four. You just never know what that guy's going to do, whereas that makes you less predictable compared to when I think Sproles is on the field. So I'm happy about that, and I think while they'll still rotate players, I think Miles Sanders will come away with, you know, how Jay Ajayi kind of became that featured back in the committee. I think Miles Sanders will be that, and I think he's going to be more than that because he has the receiving ability that Jay Ajayi, underrated receiver, but he has the explosion, he's got the athleticism and the versatility to line up around the formation that the Eagles have not had outside of Darren Sproles since LeSean McCoy. I mean, even like look at Brian Westbrook. That's the kind of player this Eagles offense is the only thing that they haven't had. And I remember I was watching the 2006 second round between the Eagles and the Saints, and I'm just watching how Westbrook was using that Andy Reid offense, and I'm thinking, yeah, man, that's what this Eagles offense needs, and I think they got that with Miles Sanders. The other pick for the second round in J.J. Arcega-Whiteside, I'm good. I'm good with this one too. I would have taken DK Metcalf. I'm not gonna lie, I'm a DK Metcalf stan. I think the fact that Andy Isabella went ahead of him and Mecole Hardman and Arcega-Whiteside and N'Keal Harry even Hollywood Brown, or Paris Campbell went ahead too, actually. So I would have still have taken, and you guys probably saw on Twitter, I kept saying, like, DK Metcalf still there, DK Metcalf still on the board. We thought it was a pipe dream he'd be there at 25. I would have preferred him over Arcega Whiteside, but Arcega Whiteside is just such a, he's a wide receiver that can do whatever you want. I mean, this is a legitimate future piece on the outside. He has the, he comes from a basketball family. You guys all see it in the highlights, the post-up ability in the red zone. Once you get behind Arcega Whiteside, I mean, you're screwed. I like to compare him to Anquan Boldin with the strength of his hands, only he's lengthier, he's taller, and he's more explosive coming out in and out of his breaks. If you're not up press coverage on him, if you don't get your hands on him, he's going to use that basketball Euro step crossover, and he's going to get down the field. And he's got underrated speed, too. I think he clocked in the 4.4s on his 40-yard dash at his pro day. So Arcega Whiteside is someone that I think people are trying to find who he's going to replace when it comes to Alshon and Deshaun and Nelson. But I don't think that there really is going to be a set plan for that yet. Everyone was like, oh, this is probably the end for Nelson Aguilar. I even thought that initially just because they took a receiver so high. But and while he can do that, I wouldn't be surprised if there is a good deal on the table where Aguilar's having a good 2019 season and you make a Golden Tate-like trade and ship him off for a third. I think J.J. Arcega-Whiteside has the ability to play inside. So does Deshaun Jackson. So does Alshon, that you can rotate those three if you move Aguilar. But it certainly does not spell the end for Aguilar that it is Arcega-Whiteside that went. If it was like an A.J. Brown or if it was Deebo Samuel, I could even Hollywood Brown in the first round. Then I could have saw, okay, this is probably the end for Nelson Aguilar. But now, hypothetically, I could see Arcega Whiteside is your red zone specific player next year that, of course, you have great depth in case the beginning of the season of last year happens again and you desperately need depth at wide receiver. But this is a guy that can come in, he can rotate in inside, he could come in the red zone, and you're going to have four players that are over 6'3", right? You're going to have Arcega Whiteside. I mean, it's going to be incredible for Carson Wentz. Arcega Whiteside, Alshon Jeffery, Zach Ertz, and Dallas Goedert are all over, or at least 6'3", 6'4", 6'5". So good luck, NFL defense is trying to guard that in the red zone. But he doesn't have to come in right away and replace anybody. I mean, Alshon Jeffery's cap hit is big in the next couple of years. I am under no circumstances want to lose Alshon Jeffery. Deshaun Jackson's going to be, 33 next year. So even Deshaun signed that 3-year extension with the Eagles, but even Jackson soon could be gone. It makes sure that you have that receiver for the future. And I wanted, if they were going to take a receiver, I wanted one with outside ability because I didn't want to wrap it up with, okay, Aguilar's done. Because if Nelson Aguilar on the open market next year still wants to come back to Philadelphia on a similar contract that he's on right now or with the fifth-year option, I mean, again, $9.5 million is not that much for a wide receiver, then I'm not someone that wants to immediately close the door on getting rid of Nelson Aguilar or on keeping Nelson Aguilar. So I want Arcega Whiteside to have that ability of, all right, in a couple of years, he's going to be your X wide receiver. He's going to replace Alshon Jeffery. Or we're going to go with the Twin Towers on the outside with Arcega Whiteside and Alshon, and we're keeping Nelson inside eventually when Deshaun Jackson moves on. It gives them, again, optionality, one of the key words, and it makes sure that your future there at receiver is good because Arcega Whiteside is an outside receiver. He can play inside, but I think he can do whatever. So and I'm not concerned. I think it was the right move to select that kind of player. Regardless, whoever the Eagles selected at any position, unless you were Miles Sanders, you were pretty much going to be a backup. The Eagles are that loaded right now on their starting roster. I mean, you look at Andre Dillard, if all things go right, he's not going to see the field this year outside of practice because that means Jason Peters stayed healthy and played in all 16 games and hopefully in all 17, 18, or hopefully 19 if they get to Miami. So I'm good with the Arcega Whiteside pick too. He's faster. He can make plays down the field. You don't have to be fast. You don't have to be a burner to make plays down the field. And he's a complete wide receiver with incredible hands and understanding of leverage. He's just a technician, and I think that, of course, a lot of people wanted that speed to eventually replace Jackson or Aguilar, but you're going to keep one of those two for still a couple years. You can still get that guy down the road. It's just good to know that you're going to have that all-around receiver eventually when Alshon Jeffrey or, you know, whoever does move on. So I think the offensive players they took with their three picks are really exciting, and it provides a future for Carson Wentz. Now, that's the thing is I don't want 2016 to happen again where Carson Wentz is throwing to DGB and Josh Huff, and if the offensive line starts to struggle, they should not be skimping on building around Carson Wentz, right? You should not try to just find the bare minimum, even when he gets this new contract. And the fact that we know they're going to have this young talent on cheap deals for a while now, it's good to know that Carson Wentz is going to still have a future with Goddard and maybe Aguilar and Arcega Whiteside and Miles Sanders. It's and Andre Diller now up front with that offensive line. It's good to know that they have made sure offensively, and that's the way the NFL is going, offensively they are still going to be very formidable even after Carson Wentz's contract hits and Peters moves on and Deshaun and maybe Alshon eventually and Zach Ertz, that they have these pieces in place for the future. All right, coming up next, we will wrap up the show with our day three takeaways. Didn't get into a podcast on Saturday, so got some stuff to say about Sharif Miller and Clayton Thorson and that trade the Eagles made at the end of the draft. So we'll get into that right here next on Locked On Eagles. So day three, welcome back everybody. Day three of the NFL draft. Only two picks for the Philadelphia Eagles, a pretty slow day. But they did come away with some interesting pieces. They select Penn State defensive end Sharif Miller in the fourth round. Then in the fifth round, they take Northwestern quarterback Clayton Thorson. So, and then, of course, they traded for Ridgeway, the Colts defensive tackle that they brought in. They got rid of their seventh-round pick for Ridgeway, so more defensive tackle depth on top of bringing in Jernigan right before the draft and Travion Hester. Add those three behind Cox and Malik Jackson. You're looking pretty good on the interior. The Sharif Miller pick I thought was interesting. Again, Howie Roseman called this a historic defensive line class, so I think people really anticipated, you know, tying that together with the Eagles' need of a younger pass rusher. I think most people thought they would take one with one of those first three picks, but Roseman said the board fell in a way that pushed this offensive talent down to them with their first three picks because there was that run on pass rushers, and there was. I'm okay that they didn't go pass rusher because the guys I really wanted were gone pretty early. The only one I would have maybe considered was Montez Sweat, right? If the Eagles didn't select Andre Dillard moving up, my preference would have been Montez Sweat, of course, if it wasn't Josh Jacobs, of course. But I'm sure a lot of you guys are glad you're not going to hear that name a whole lot anymore on the podcast. But, you know, Cleveland Farrell went fourth overall. So the only player I thought was worth it after pick 21 for a selection was Montez Sweat. Even in the second round, there wasn't a whole lot of value. There was players like, I mean, Christian Miller even fell. There weren't that many players that apparently were as highly sought after as maybe we thought on the board. So you come back, you get on day three another upside player in the fourth round. You did it with Josh Sweat last year. Now you got Sharif Miller. While neither one's a lock, you kind of double down on that pure athletic upside on the edge. You have the great run stoppers, which Sharif Miller, by the way, is a really good run stopper. It is hard once he sets the edge. It's really hard to get around him. But, you know, he is also the lengthy. He's 6'6". He's super fast and explosive for an edge rusher. Add that with Josh Sweat. It provides a ton of upside, and you don't need necessarily either one to totally impact the game right away with Derek Barnett here and Brandon Graham and Vinnie Curry back for another year. We'll see what happens with Chris Long. The Miller pick kind of still leaves it up in the air because if they took one in the first round, that would have spelled the end for Chris Long. Whereas now in the fourth round, I don't know. I think Chris Long, though, he still said bet on him not being there, plan as if he's not going to be there. But even if he's not there, I think at least Miller or Sweat, hopefully both, but at least one of them should give the Eagles good production. I think one of them should meet their upside. It was good that they doubled down on that. And this is a good move, too, for Josh Sweat that they didn't go with a pass rusher early. It gives him an opportunity now to beat out Miller and become that fourth pass rusher. So it doesn't close the door on either one now that has a future with this team, considering the age of Brandon Graham, considering the only one-year deal of Vinnie Curry. Both of these players could be the 3-4 in 2020, right? They could be your third and fourth pass rusher behind Barnett and Graham. And Miller, he's a kind of player that, again, he's a better run stopper than maybe people thought. He's not just some raw talent that's just solely used to get after the quarterback, but it is the upside it's really the speed that was the big recruiting factor for me to come in and be a fan of this pick. His closing speed on a quarterback is so fast, and that's a big advantage for the Eagles because they have struggled. And the play that's sticking out in my mind right now is Cam Newton bouncing off Brandon Graham's chest last year and converting that 4th-and-12 that eventually helped the Panthers win that very, very frustrating football game. But I think of that and I say, all right, having another guy like Sharif Miller that has that closing speed to make sure the quarterback, and once Sharif Miller gets his hands on you, it's hard to get out of that grip. His finishing is a big, big positive for the Eagles, adding to this pass rushing room. So you have those guys on the edge now to develop with the already certified top three. You brought back Jernigan. The Eagles have plenty of pass rushers this year. So they're, what, 6 deep, 7 deep at the defensive line? It's looking like a formidable top group in the NFL. They come back around and then they take Clayton Thorson, the Northwestern quarterback, in the fifth round. Which I was surprised. By the way, Easton Stick, the North Dakota State quarterback, went one pick ahead. He went to the Chargers. I think if Easton Stick was there, they might have took Easton Stick instead of Thorson. But Thorson, interesting player. I like the strategy, like the Patriots continue to invest in the quarterback position, maybe flip him for picks if they can pan out like Jacoby Brissett did. But for me, I would have probably went with, although now looking back, maybe it was the wrong move. Tyree Jackson went undrafted out of Buffalo, but that was the kind of upside guy I would have wanted if you were going to take a quarterback that early. But because you gave up a 4th and a 6 to get Andre Dillard, I wasn't really a big fan of the move for Thorson. Because, yeah, of course, Nate Sudfeld could not be here after 2019. Unless Sudfeld, which the only way Sudfeld is gone next year, I would say, is if he's a starting quarterback somewhere else. And if he's a starting quarterback, that means, first off, Carson Wentz got hurt again, which is a problem in its own right. And then that means Sudfeld played good enough to get a starting gig next year. I mean, even though I'm pretty high on Nate Sudfeld, and even if you are out there, do you think that that's a reasonable scenario? I really don't. So there's not a whole lot of scenarios where Nate Sudfeld isn't in Philadelphia. I mean, is he going to choose somewhere else to become a backup? Probably not. I mean, it's a pretty good situation in Philadelphia with Doug Peterson in this offense. So I think Sudfeld's going to be in Philadelphia for a while longer, unless he gets a starting job. So taking a quarterback with that fifth-round pick, despite all the talent that was still on the board on defense, I would have rather went with a Jaquan Johnson, the Miami safety. I would have rather went with a defensive player that you didn't address. Try to go with an upside linebacker, especially when you only had that one more pick in the 7th round since you moved down and took Thorson. Thorson's a player, big arm, really accurate down the field, despite people saying he's not that accurate. I kind of beg to differ. He, when he wants to put touch on the ball and drop it in a bucket, he can do that. I mean, this is a good player for he was someone that some scouts thought would have been as high as a 3rd-round pick. Some people were even saying he's just as good as Daniel Jones. So the Eagles got him in the 5th round. The Giants get Daniel Jones at 6th overall. I mean, that sounds pretty good to me. It's just not a move I would have made based on the amount of picks they had left. The other prospect I like better. And also the point that, I mean, is he going to make the roster? Or are the Eagles going to carry 3 quarterbacks again? I know they have with Sudfeld, Foles, and Wentz. Is Thorson going to do enough to convince them to add that on their roster instead of keeping another corner or another safety or another, you know, defensive lineman? Not really sure. So, you know, I get the move. I get the point of if Sudfeld plays well enough, maybe you can move him when someone's quarterback gets hurt, much like a Jacoby Brissett to the Colts situation. But at the same time, I don't think it was a move that I necessarily would have made based on what the situation the Eagles were in already, because I think Thorson could be that guy that develops like Sudfeld and you move him for a pick eventually, but you already have that asset in Nate Sudfeld. I think what you could have did is once you move Sudfeld eventually, or he's not in Philadelphia anymore, that's when you reinvest in the position. But overall, I think he's a pretty good prospect for a fifth-round pick. Last thing to get into before we wrap up the show, no secondary and no linebacker selected for the Eagles. Very happy that they didn't go with a corner because they don't need one. They already have too many. It's going to be hard enough to evaluate these players, deciding who you want to be the future at corner. It's just going to be a battle royale in training camp if Jim Schwartz, of course, allows that to be the case. But no safety taken either, and I think that's telling because this is very good now for Avonte Maddox, and it's very good for Eagles fans out there that want a certain corner to play. Maybe you want Sidney Jones to end up earning a spot in the slot. Maybe you like Cravion LeBlanc in there. Maybe Rasul Douglas now has a shot on the outside. Maybe Mills moves inside if you really want Rasul on the field too, and Schwartz refuses to not have Jalen Mills on the field in some shape or form. But I think this is very good for the fact that Avonte Maddox, I think Andre Sandejo was brought in to be that new Corey Graham, but I think Avonte Maddox is just the clear better option, and it allows you, with Maddox moving to that third safety spot, since you didn't take one, it allows you now to have that extra corner on the field, right? So now instead of it being Maddox inside with Mills and Darby, now it hypothetically could be Sidney Jones or Cravion LeBlanc, so you get to evaluate those players and see what they can do this year while still having that valuable piece in Avonte Maddox on the field. I would have preferred them to take, I would have liked them to take a safety in this class, but I'm not as concerned as other people because while McLeod's deal is done next year, Malcolm Jenkins has not showed any signs of slowing down. I'm very confident in Avonte Maddox to do the job. I wish Jim Schwartz would give Rasul Douglas a shot or Jalen Mills, whoever he's not going to play at corner, but I just don't think Schwartz is going to do that. So I'm not as concerned though, because I do like Maddox at that spot, and I do think even if they want to keep McLeod again, just because he's on a one-year deal, I mean, Tim Jernigan came back even after they parted ways, so I don't want to say McLeod's necessarily done this year if he has a really good season. I'm not really as concerned about safety as other people, and it's not like they don't have a whole nother draft next year with a boatload of picks. They're going to have, what, two-thirds, maybe three third-round picks next year, depending on the compensatory picks. They're already going to get one in Nick Foles. Who knows with Darby? Who knows what else could happen that they can get more compensatory picks? So you can take a safety next year. It's not to me a concern immediately in 2019 or 2020, much like, again, left tackle was going to be with Andre Dillard. And a linebacker, too, just another position. It was a weak class, and it's a position that the Eagles barely use. And Nigel Bradham is still going to be here for a while longer. But, yeah, again, corner, though. It's interesting. We'll see what happens. We'll continue to cover that throughout the summer in training camp and mini camp and, of course, the preseason. But it's such a logjam right now. And I really hope Jim Schwartz, now that they didn't take a safety, really pushes Maddox towards that spot. Because if he's, or even anyone, again, it could be Douglas if he changed his mind. I thought he played well at safety against the Giants last year. It could be Jalen Mills, who played safety at LSU. But if Jim Schwartz doesn't have any one of these corners move to the third spot, then, again, there's only three spots for six guys. And it's going to be really hard to swallow if Sidney Jones, Rasul Douglas, and Cravion LeBlanc are all on the bench for me. We'll see the dynamic between the front office, because I think they're going to push Sidney Jones to play. I think they like Rasul more than Schwartz, but I think Schwartz likes Mills more than the front office does. But it'll be really interesting. But those are my takeaways from the draft. Again, a really fun one, a lot of fun pieces to evaluate now for the Eagles. A lot of offense, so for you offensive junkies out there, go out and YouTube and Miles Sanders and Arcega Whiteside. They got some fun tape to go study. And again, we'll continue our coverage throughout the week. We got winners and losers tomorrow. Excited for that show. And once again, just thank you so much for just the past couple months tuning in to our draft coverage here on Locked On Eagles with me and Gino, with all the rankings and the Locked On the Mocks and just the speculatory shows on every position. It's been a wild blast of a offseason with our first stint here on Locked On Eagles. So, as always, I'm Lou DiBiase signing off. Please subscribe to the show if you would. If you could leave us a five-star review or five-star rate hopefully a good review if you like the show, but any feedback we do appreciate. And of course on Twitter you can follow us at Locked On Birds and at DiBiase LOE, and of course my buddy Gino at Gino_LOE. But for now, I'm Lou DiBiase once again signing off. As always, thank you for downloading, thank you for listening, and let's go Birds.